This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
Ambassador Gordon Sondland has been at the center of this week's impeachment proceedings. While the witnesses before him were all career diplomats with extensive track records in foreign service, Sondland is a wealthy West Coast hotelier who donated $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee, which helped him land his ambassadorship. Sondland's leading role at the heart of this saga has put a new focus on the longstanding bipartisan practice of political appointments to overseas posts.
Ambassadors like Woody Johnson to the United Kingdom, Jamie McCourt, the U.S. ambassador to France, they're big donors. They've already given hundreds of thousands to the 2020 reelection fund. There are people like Robin Bernstein in the Dominican Republic, Lana Marks in South Africa. They belong to Mar-a-Lago. That's $200,000 a joint.
That was Jim Axelrod, chief investigative and senior national correspondent for CBS News. CBS recently uncovered emails from San Diego billionaire Doug Manchester, who was nominated to be the ambassador to the Bahamas. Manchester had clear support from President Trump, but his nomination was held up in the Senate for more than 2 years. And then in September, the Republican National Committee reached out.
The head of the RNC, Ronna McDaniel, sends Doug Manchester an email, and it asks him for a $500,000 donation.
Manchester responded to the RNC and was very clear about what he wanted in exchange for his donation.
So he says, as you know, I'm not supposed to do any, but my wife is sending a contribution for $100,000. Remember, they've been asked for $500,000. Assuming I get voted out of the Foreign Relations Committee on Wednesday to the floor, we need you to have the majority leader to bring it to a majority vote. Once confirmed, our family will respond.
Once Congress found out about his email, the White House asked Manchester to withdraw his name from consideration. Manchester's example might seem extreme, but the transactional nature of these appointments is not that unusual when it comes to presidents naming ambassadors. But under the Trump administration, the number of political supporters who've been appointed to ambassadorships has gone up significantly. For more on this, I'm joined by Ryan Scovel, associate professor of law at Marquette University. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Ambassador Dennis Jett, professor of international affairs at Penn State and author of the book American Ambassadors, the Past, Present and Future of America's Diplomats. Welcome to The Takeaway, Dennis.
Thank you for having me.
Ryan, let's start with you. We said at the top that political ambassadorships aren't a new phenomenon. How far back does this trend go?
Well, it extends almost as far back as the founding of the country itself. These types of appointments were extremely common during the 19th century, and they remained common through the beginning of the 20th century. Since roughly the 1920s, 1930s, the percentage of political appointees has dropped pretty significantly to the point where over the last several decades, it's been approximately 30% of all ambassadorships. But the history is pretty longstanding.
Ambassador Jett, we mentioned that these appointments are growing under President Trump quite a bit. You have worked in foreign service for decades. You've worked in Argentina, Malawi, Liberia, Mozambique. Why is this pay-to-play system, if you will, so troubling for the Foreign Service?
Well, I think it's expected that the president will name a certain amount of ambassadors, political appointee ambassadors, as opposed to career Foreign Service officers. But I think what troubles me and other officers is when it's done on the basis of money. If there's some obviously qualified person who has the credentials to be an ambassador, that's one thing. But if you have a real estate developer who gives $1 million and gets the post because of that's something else.
What is it about these posts that hold such allure for wealthy donors, Ambassador? Because I can imagine, you know, if you're a young person looking to get into a career in foreign service, it could be, you know, really exciting to think you'll be traveling around the world in all these posts that I just mentioned. But if you've already got a pretty significant stash of wealth, why Ambassador?
Well, it's a fancy title. That's something you put on your business card and your resume, and nobody has to remember your name after that. They all call you ambassador. And so for people with a lot of money and a low self-esteem or whatever their problem is, they can buy the title.
Do, Ambassador, do these political appointees, I mean, other than the fact that this is a fancy title and it has a lot of accolades and mystery around it, I mean, they're actually, depending on your ambassadorship, you actually have to get stuff done. If you're not qualified to do that work, does that have the potential to do damage to the U.S.'s relationship with whatever country you might be stationed in?
Absolutely. And I think it's a danger to national security when these people are nominated and approved as ambassadors. If you suggested that you're going to turn over the command of an aircraft carrier to a real estate developer because of a political contribution, everybody would go nuts. But if you turn over an embassy to a similar kind of person, then people say, well, it's a diplomacy. It's, you know, that's endless cocktail parties and not paying parking tickets. But the reality is you have to manage a complex organization, the embassy. And we'd like to think that the better our government functions, the better off we all are. And secondly, you are the United States. You're the number one representative in the country you're in. And so people look to you and reach conclusions about the United States, about its reliability, about its seriousness, based on the image you project and how well you do the job.
Ryan, you looked at the qualifications of political appointees, and I'm wondering if you could share with us whether or not there's a connection between how much money they donated, how wealthy the person is, and what position they end up receiving.
Well, there has been a pretty significant development in qualifications over time. If you were to compare the political appointees under Trump and Reagan, for example, you'd find that there's been an erosion across the board. That is, Trump's political appointees are not the same as the political appointees that have been taking place under prior administrations. They're not radically different, but there's been an incremental decrease in qualifications. And that's true not only with respect to language abilities, prior experience in the receiving state or the region, but also with respect to prior experience in foreign policy, prior experience in organizational leadership. So there has been a very noticeable downward trajectory here in terms of the average qualifications of the political appointees who make it into office. There is one study that has found that there's about a 10% decrease in the performance in office if you were to compare political appointees with career appointees. That is, the political appointees are less successful. And there's also evidence that there's a confluence of two significant trends here. One, a decrease in qualifications over time, and then two, alongside that, a sharp increase in the average size of campaign contributions. And this raises the possibility that campaign contributions are, you know, effectively creating pressure on the president to choose individuals based on how much money they're giving rather than whether they're qualified to serve. And that in turn, you know, creates the possibility that performance is essentially falling off as a result of these pressures to look for individuals who are contributing a lot of money.
Ambassador Jett, this is not a new tradition, as we've been saying throughout the segment. This is something that has happened under multiple administrations. It has seen an increase under the Trump administration. But part of the reason we're talking about this is because the United States citizens yesterday watched Ambassador Sondland testify, and he, unlike many of the folks who came before him, is not a career Foreign Service employee or diplomat. He was a donor of $1 million to the Trump campaign. So what was your assessment of how he conducted himself with respect to Ukraine?
Well, Ambassador Sondland is as qualified to be ambassador as I am to run a chain of hotels. He clearly doesn't get it. He said yesterday, I'm not a note taker. I have all these conversations with heads of state and other important people, but I don't bother to take notes. When you are an official of the United States government, you are speaking not on your own behalf, but on behalf of the American people and the American government. And therefore, you have an obligation to do things like take notes so you know what commitments are being made, what's being said, and that policy is properly implemented. And so I think he's just the latest demonstration of somebody who's completely out of their depth, even though he was sitting there smirking the whole time and obviously thinks because of his wealth, he's entitled to be arrogant as well as incompetent.
Ryan, just wrapping up the segment here, we saw this issue play out for those who did not tire of politics yesterday and watched the Democratic presidential debate that came after the testimony. Let's listen to a clip of Elizabeth Warren and how she brought this up.
How did Ambassador Sondland get there? You know, this is not a man who had any qualifications except one. He wrote a check for $1 million. The whole notion that donors think they're going to get ambassadorships on the other side. Anyone who wants to give me a big donation, don't ask to be an ambassador because I'm not going to have that happen.
Ryan, we've got 30 seconds. Is this going to take off in 2020 as a political issue?
I would like to think so. I'm a little bit skeptical, in part because this has been a recurring political issue over the course of the past several decades. It seems to pop up anytime there's a controversial appointment. I would like to think that Congress could step in here to take action and that presidential candidates themselves will repeat this promise, but I'm not sure.
We will see. I'm speaking with Ryan Scovel, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Ambassador Dennis Coleman Jett, Professor of International Affairs at Penn State. Thanks to you both.
Thanks a lot. Good.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.